All right. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to How to Survive 2025. I am Dacia M. Arnold.
I'm Brian Keene.
And I am Jim Cobb.
And welcome, listeners. We are on episode 4, which is really, really exciting. If you've been listening to past episodes, you know that we tend to give out a little bit of homework. So in episode 2, we gave out homework to make a plan. Any plan at all, whether it be an escape plan in case of a fire, or Brian, was there another circumstance? If there was a fire, what would you do if perhaps you lost your job tomorrow?
Yeah, do you mean what was the homework assignment
that
I
gave out? Assignment from week 2.
I don't know, Miss Arnold, because I was out behind the gym making out with somebody. I forgot my homework assignment. My God, I'm having high school flashbacks right now. I believe the example I gave was I wanted the listeners to look around wherever they were, be it an apartment, be it a home, be it a hotel, and think about if there was a fire, how would they get out? And think about the various scenarios of where the fire would start and how that would impact their plan for leaving. So I hope listeners have done that. If not, I will be coming around to set your individual places on fire in the coming weeks.
No fear-mongering allowed on this podcast.
No.
So last week, we got into some really deep, deep topics. But one of the things that came up for homework for last week was to make sure that if something were to happen to you, that the family that you leave behind is taken care of, whether it be a living will, whether it be a will period or a power of attorney in those cases. So,
right. And I wanted to point out, I got an email from a listener who, like the three of us, is also a writer. And the listener said, I'm a little disappointed you didn't get into literary estates. Well, this is not really the show for that. Our audience is not just fellow writers and people who read our books. Our audience on this show is very broad. But for the crossover audience, the people who are authors or readers of our books, I would point you to Neil Gaiman's website. Now, I know that there has been some controversy lately with Neil Gaiman. This is not that podcast. We're not going to cover that. But regardless of the controversy, he has a very valuable tool available on his website. It is a PDF of a literary estate form. You can download, fill in the blanks, get it notarized, and it's perfectly legal, and it's free. So I recommend that you go do that. I'm also going to be putting one up as well. But
thank you. Yeah, hurry before Neil Gaiman gets canceled, and it's gone.
I don't know. There's just not enough time in the day. You know what I spent like 6 hours doing today out in the heat?
Mowing the yard.
No. I got a guy for that. But harvesting celery, harvesting peppers. Harvesting so many tomatoes that I could open my own ketchup company. And then I thought, oh, geez, I got to go inside and talk about food and gardening.
I've got questions for you. I'm all about, we could jump right in.
Well, yeah, we should let listeners know. Today's topic is food. It was recommended by Jim. And we started out the podcast getting into the emotional and mental state of prepping. But now we're going to start to get down to brass tacks as 2025 closes in on us. So, yeah, who has questions? Who wants to start us off?
One thing, I want to interject just one thing, going back to what we were just talking about with, I always refer to it as the death file, where you know, you've got your last wishes and all that stuff. I came across something the other day, and this is not a sponsored product plug or anything. This is, they have no idea I'm going to talk about this on the show. Look up a product called Knock Box, N-O-K Box. I think the website is either theknockbox.com or knockbox.com. Basically, this thing is wonderful. If you're looking for a one-stop shop to figure out how you can communicate everything you need to your family in the event that you pass, they've got it all figured out. It's basically just a bunch of forms that you fill out. It comes in a nice little tote. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I can't recommend it highly enough.
Nice.
So want to Thanks, make sure Jim. We talk about that.
All right.
Awesome. Great. I've got questions about food, Brian.
Okay.
So if you grow you grow tomatoes every year, right?
Every year. And here's the thing. I didn't plan on growing tomatoes this year. There's just so many seeds in the ground from last year that they're like triffids. They just pop up.
So do you can your tomatoes? And if you can tomatoes last year, did you run out? Do you have more tomatoes?
I used to can. I grew up watching my great-grandmother can, my grandmother can, my mother can. And then around the time I was a teenager, my mother started freezing everything. She had the freezer in the kitchen and then a big chest freezer downstairs. And, I was a teenager, so it never occurred to me to ask why the switch. I understand now as an adult why the switch. Canning is not for everybody. It is labor intensive. It is time intensive. And I personally find it to be more trouble than it's worth.
Hmm.
If you do want to pursue canning, I'm sure Jim can give out some great resources and tips. But what I do is freeze. And from a prepper mindset, freezing works for my household because I have backup generators in case we lose power. My freezers are going to continue to work. If you don't have that in your home, maybe canning is the way to go. But yeah, I freeze everything. Not everything. I don't freeze peppers because I found that they don't do well frozen. But I freeze tomatoes. I dry tomatoes both, and I still have more tomatoes left over than I will ever need. I'm still eating last year's tomatoes while I'm freezing more. But they're handy. Put them in the oven at 350 degrees for about 15-20 minutes. Take them out, pop them in freezer bags, put them in, and then I'll use them throughout the year for chili and stews and things like that. I will warn people when you freeze them like that, the skin is liable to come off when you then go to prepare them, but that's okay. You can just pick around it or eat it if you want. I don't freeze cucumbers either. I've found no good way to do that. So I guess I do still engage in a little bit of canning in that whatever cucumbers are left over at the end of the year, pickles.
Yeah. Yep. Those are my favorite kind of pickles. They're actual fresh from the garden pickles.
And now, I've had so many cucumbers that last year I started experimenting with alcoholic pickles.
Oh,
dear. Gin-infused pickles, bourbon-infused pickles.
How'd it go?
The gin ones came out great. As a bourbon aficionado, I'll never do that again. Well, together.
So, Brian, do you also have like a vegetable co-op?
No, not so much. Because I live in a fairly rural area, so mm-hmm. most people around here have gardens. What I do is whatever I have left over, there are several shelters and food banks that I'll help out, I'll give to. And there's a couple people right here in our neighborhood who are in need, and it's not just me, all the neighbors will do it, stop by and, there on their porch, you'll see Brian's tomatoes and someone else's green beans and someone else's peas. That's the way it is around here. It's one of the reasons I choose to live here because people do still help each other out. Mm-hmm. But you can't always rely on that. So,
no.
Now, I know a lot of listeners out there who are new to prepping, new to this whole thing, and they have Costco club cards.
That's me.
And they're going to Costco and they're seeing the
bucket.
The survival bucket, freeze-dried food. Jim, what you're the expert. Is that necessary?
No. It could prove useful in some circumstances, but the general rule of thumb that I recommend people follow is store what you eat, eat what you store. Meaning, stock up on things that you and your family eat routinely that also happens to be shelf stable. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, those buckets of food that you find at warehouse stores or you see, you know, the pallets of freeze-dried stuff online, they're very expensive for what you're getting. You know, for the amount of food that it's giving you, it's a hefty price per ounce or, you know, per 100 calories, however you want to look at it. On top of that, a lot of the food, it's okay for short periods of time, but a lot of those things, they're high in sodium and they're high in some other things. A friend of mine is a wilderness survival instructor, and he's commented before that, you know, after about a week of living off of the freeze-dried meals, your hands get so swollen from that sodium that it's hard to do things, you know. On top of all of that, there's something very important you need to consider when you're looking at any type of food storage. A lot of people, when they have a sudden change in their diet, their bodies don't like that. Okay. So what I like to tell people is make sure that, you know, any food you store, make sure you like it and make sure that the food likes you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because if you're 3 days into a grid down scenario and your farts have lumps and your toilet's not working, this is not a fun time. Okay. You want to stick with things that are going to agree with you and that aren't going to cause additional problems on top of what you're currently facing. You want to always strive to make things better for yourself, not make things worse.
I know in advance that when Daisha puts together the social media interview for this week's episode, that's going to be the quote right there. If your farts have lumps.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Staying hydrated is really important. I know we're not going to get into water storage this week, but that is really big, especially if you have the bubble guts, as we call it.
Yep. Yep.
So we talk about store what you eat, eat what you store. Mm-hmm. You know, investing in shelf-stable products. But what does that actually mean? Like, you know, a new listener, new to this, how do they know if something's shelf stable?
Well, let's approach it like this. Daisha, you're admittedly kind of new to this part of things.
It's overwhelming. What would it mean to you? So it would mean that things that I use regularly, so like canned vegetables, isn't easy. Like, we like to do fresh vegetables, mm-hmm. but if we're in a hurry, it's dance night or something. Yep. I'm pulling a can of vegetables off the shelf. And so what it means by when I hear like store what you eat and eat what you store, mm-hmm. I'm thinking I have maybe a week or two or longer, a month worth of canned goods. You know, sure. veggies like green beans and corn and peas, like those regulars, those staples. Mm-hmm.
Now, think beyond the cans too. Mm-hmm. Boxed goods,
ramen like noodles,
pasta, ramen,
rice. We have rice we just cook regularly.
Beans and rice is a very common prepper staple, and I know why. You know, they're cheap, they're filling, but by the same token, nobody wants to just live on beans and rice voluntarily. Okay. Variety is the spice of life, right? There is a thing out there called appetite fatigue, where you're eating the exact same thing every day for so long that you get to a point, no matter how hungry you are, you don't want to eat. You know? So if you're in a position right now where you're going to assemble your prepper pantry, so to speak, take advantage of all of the resources available to you. Go to the grocery store and go up and down the aisles and look for things that are shelf stable, meaning they're not something that's going to just rot away on you within the next month or two. Okay. Canned goods, boxed goods,
peanut butter, preserves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All that kind of stuff. You can put together a pretty comprehensive pantry to last your family, you know, at least a couple of weeks without even filling your grocery cart, mm-hmm. you know, because the other thing to keep in mind here in America, we typically eat a whole lot more than we really need to eat. Okay. We eat for fun. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, we have contests to see who can eat the most, the fastest. I mean, you know, but as a general rule, we tend to consume way more calories than we truly need. And yes, in a disaster scenario, you're probably going to be more physically active than you might otherwise be because you're dealing with damages, you're dealing with cleanup, things like that. You're still not going to be burning through 5,000 calories a day. Okay. You're just not. You can stand to miss a meal here and there. Most of us have enough calories on hand that we carry around with us all the time that are going to subsist, that we can subsist on for a little while. Mm-hmm. You know, the missed meal cramps, they're not fun, but they're not the end of the world. So circling back just a little bit, we're talking about survival foods and shelf-stable foods. Another concept that you need to consider is in the event that the grid goes down, for whatever reason, okay, aliens invade.
Yes.
You have food in your refrigerator. You have food in your freezer. Those things should be eaten first before you even go to the shelf. Your refrigerator, the food in your fridge, will last at least 4 solid hours until it starts to become an issue. Okay. With your freezer, it depends on how full it is, anywhere from 24 to 48 hours before things start to turn. All of that food, as best you can, should be eaten rather than thrown away. When in doubt, throw it out. If you're questioning whether it's good or not, get rid of it. Because again, you don't want to deal with, you know, digestive upset. But if, let's say, you have a freezer full of venison and chicken and all this kind of stuff and it's starting to thaw and you can't conceivably eat all of it, you can't conceivably preserve all of it, talk to your neighbors, have a cookout. Mm-hmm. It's far better that those calories go into somebody's body than into a dumpster. Okay. And that's before you even have to crack open a can or a jar or a box of anything that's on the shelf. You have to look at things in terms of priority. Eat the fruits, eat the veggies, eat the meat, eat the eggs as much as you can safely before that stuff goes bad. Then worry about what you've got on the shelf.
When I moved from Denver to Pennsylvania, we had planned on getting land. So we moved out of the suburbs and we decided to never have an HOA ever again. So we moved out here. It's really important to me to kind of get in the homestead frame of mind. Sure. And one of the biggest things was if we live off grid, then there is no waste management. There is no, like, nobody's coming to pick up my trash. Mm-hmm. So then, like, looking at your trash and trying to figure out, like, ways to minimize, like, I mean, your carbon footprint, because it's always good to be environmentally, like, sound mm-hmm. and conscious. Sure. But look at your trash and look how much trash, like those buckets, everything's mm-hmm. individually packaged in this yep. plastic. Where is that going to go? You're going to burn it. It's going to go in the atmosphere. It's even worse mm-hmm. than, you know, if you had just thrown it in the trash to begin with.
Sure.
So one thing that I started to do to minimize that, the trash and my trash output, was kind of to make things from scratch. Like a lot of things, like my kids' snacks come in individually wrapped mm-hmm. then plastic that you cannot recycle. Like it gets right. those bags and the outlining of like juice drinks and stuff like that. You can't throw that in recycling because it gets in the gears and it gunks up the gears. Mm-hmm. So I had to figure out a way to cut that out. And one of those was cooking from scratch, but that's a lot of flour. And I've heard of Weebles and mm-hmm. just everything gets really overwhelming, but I heard you can flour.
You can, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
There's a school of thought out there that says you should freeze your flower for at least a few days, because that will supposedly kill off any eggs or whatever that might be in the flower. But as with every, you know, plus, there's a minus. Freezing it and then letting it come back to room temperature can introduce moisture into the flower, which can lead to bad things. The accepted best practice that I'm aware of is to put the flower into like a Mylar bag or something similar, throw in an oxygen absorber, and then seal it up. The oxygen gets sucked out of it. Nothing is going to survive without the oxygen. So if there is anything in there, it'll be killed off, and you're not introducing potential moisture issues, which can lead to mold and things like that.
And, you know, I don't have trash pickup here, Dacia.
I did not know that.
And that's just to save money, because, you know, the trash service around here is ridiculously expensive. I mostly compost what I can. Anything that's burnable, I burn in my burn barrel, and I do so responsibly. And then those ashes get added to the compost bin. Whatever doesn't fit in those two categories, I haul to the recycling center once a week.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm reminded of when my dad was still alive. He and his roommate would generate more trash, just the two of them would generate more trash than my family of five every single week. Because I would go over there to help out with, you know, taking the trash out and things like that. And their trash barrel would be just overflowing as I'm taking it down to the end of the driveway. And we're not even we're barely filling one garbage bag with us. You know, we've got recycling, and then we've got one trash bag, and that's about it. Because, you know, like Brian, we compost everything we can. We don't burn a whole lot. We will occasionally, but a lot of the stuff that we would burn would just go into the recycling bin, you know, because it's the cardboard, the paper, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit of plastic ends up in the garbage bag.
Yeah.
And this is something, like you said, to think about in a grid down situation where, if you normally have trash pickup and now you don't, what are you doing with it? You know, where are you going to go with it? And there is a security element here where if neighbors in the area see that you've got this giant pile of food packages and, you know, they're punching new holes in their belts trying to keep their pants up, they might start wondering just how much food you do have. And if you have any to share, which we can dive more into that down the road, you know, because that's a whole other tangent, but it is something to consider.
So should everyone be growing their own food?
I believe everybody who can grow food should grow some.
Okay, I've tried and I cannot. Right. Cannot.
Not everybody can. I do not have any gardening talent whatsoever. My wife is a phenomenal gardener, does wonderful with virtually any kind of plant. So, you know, I'm just the nominated hole digger, you know. but I would love to see people at least try. Mm-hmm. You know, if nothing else, the experience will teach you a lot. It'll teach you frustration. It will teach you anger. And it will give you a greater appreciation for just what goes into producing food in this country. You know, a lot of people don't, you know, they just go to the store and plunk down their credit card and away they go. And they don't have any concept of how much work went into producing that bag of vegetables or whatever the case is.
And you can try it no matter where you live. Like if you live in a metropolitan area, you know, you can do a windowsill garden box. You can, you know, buy a green bean vine and stick a pole in a flower pot and put it in your window. If you have roof access, you've got a great garden right there. Just watch how much soil you're putting on top of it. You don't want to collapse the building. But, you know.
I've accidentally grown onions and potato roots on my counter before.
See, you're off to a good start.
I know, but, right?
Yep.
All right. So, Jim, Daisha can't grow anything.
Yeah.
So she wants to start a prepper pantry. She wants to be ready if the grid goes down this winter or if Pittsburgh is inundated with a flood and they're out of water, they're, you know, underwater for 2 weeks, or, you know, America breaks into a second civil war. So she's going to start building her prepper pantry this week. She's going to buy shelf stable foods.
Okay.
Yep.
How important is rotation, and how should she approach rotation?
Rotation is important. In real estate, the slogan is location, location, location. With prepping, it's rotation, rotation, rotation. Now, the reason for this is you want, in the event a crisis hits, you want the freshest possible food you can have on the shelf. Okay. Now, let me preface this discussion by saying that best buy dates and things like that don't necessarily mean what a lot of people think they mean. You know, if you pull a can of peas off the shelf and it says best buy September 2024, that doesn't mean October 1st you throw it away. It means that the end of September of 2024 is the last date that the manufacturer will guarantee top flavor, freshness, and nutrient. That's it. That's all it means. It doesn't mean it's going bad. It just means that's as far as the manufacturer's willing to guarantee it. Beyond that, you're on your own. I've eaten things that were 4 or 5 years out of date, and they were perfectly fine. You know, some things, some vegetables, that they get a little mushy after a while. They're still edible. They're still going to fill your belly. They just might not taste as great as they may have prior to that date. But so, again, oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But that's where rotation comes in. You want to always use the oldest products on your shelf first. First in, first out is the FIFO is the acronym.
So as you're slowly building your prepper pantry, you go to the grocery store, maybe you buy, you have enough money this week to buy 2 extra days worth of food. So you get those black beans, those cans of black beans, you bring them home, you stick them behind the ones you already have.
Yeah.
That's the easy way to keep track, right?
Yep. Okay. Now, what some people will do is they'll take like a Sharpie and they'll write right on the lid of the can in big letters, big numbers, what that best buy date is, because that way it's easier to read than sitting there trying to squint, you know, and try to find it elsewhere on the can.
Right.
Some people will keep a running inventory and they keep a little spiral notebook or something and they write right on there what came in, what's going out, and all that. You got to find a system that works best for you. You know, if you're just starting out, simple is best. You know, if you want to write on the can, the, you know, some people put the date they purchased it. Some people put the best buy date, whatever makes the most sense to you. Give it a shot. See how it goes. You can always change things later. You know, none of this is set in stone, but you need to start somewhere. You know, the first goal should be to be able to have enough food on hand to feed your family for 1 solid week without having to go to the store for anything. Go for 1 week. Then,
so,
oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
We talked a lot about vegetables. So what, what about meat? Like right now, I know, like, I was going to ask you this and I'm just trying to like, I was going to preface it with a joke, but it's like, it's deer season's kind of over and we don't see as many like deers on the road, but now there's a bunch of raccoons on the side of the road. Is there ever a time where like roadkill, and when you're desperate, safe to eat?
I mean, if you're Robert F. Kennedy, but
stop it. We weren't gonna.
We weren't gonna go
we
there.
We weren't gonna go well, there.
That's a nonpartisan joke. We can all agree that he did, in fact, take a bit of home.
Is roadkill edible?
Is roadkill edible?
Kinda. I mean, it's okay for a little while. You know, if it's been sitting there for a week, I'd probably not you know, partake, but
it's fresh, like it's yours.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know what it's like over in your neck of woods. Here, if you hit a deer, you can call the DNR and, you know, make arrangements to take that deer home.
Or is that to true?
Have it. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we can here too.
Huh. And if it's a smaller, you know, if it's a raccoon or something like that, I know people who will just, oh well, yeah, toss it in the trunk. And they'll take it home and process it and have it for dinner, can it, you know, whatever the case is. That said, this isn't something that you're just going to pick up and do one day.
Okay? Don't.
It's don't. Probably not going to turn out well. I'm not saying that, you know, harvesting critters is difficult, but I mean, there's a process. And you got to do it the right way. Otherwise, you could foul things up real easy.
Particularly if you're going to can it. Yes. Now, my grandmother, bless her, she's 98 this year.
Oh, wow.
And she finally, at age 96, stopped canning every year. But she used, you know, when my grandfather was still alive, he would get at least one buck a year. And they would can most of it rather than freezing the meat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a kid, I love venison, but as a kid, I was always afraid to try the canned venison because it looked unpalatable to me. And it still looks unpalatable to me, but it's perfectly fine to eat because she knows what she's doing when it comes
right.
to canning. But anytime you're canning meat, you really need to pay attention because if you don't get that seal tight, if you don't do it right,
anything that's vegetables too, you could poison yourself with like not preserved correctly vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's, I think that's what's like, I have all the cans, but I think that's what is the biggest thing. Like, am I going to accidentally poison my family? I don't know.
Freezing might be the way to go for you.
Yeah.
You know, it might be.
Or
I've got the vacuum bags.
Yeah, or drying them. Or that actually, I've got two questions for you, Jim.
Okay.
Let's talk about dehydrating. Now, you can go on Amazon, you can buy a food dehydrator. How well does that store? What does it do to the nutritional value? Is that an option for people who want to
prep? Sure. It's definitely an option. There, you can, it is conceivable to dehydrate food in your oven. I don't recommend it because I don't think it works as well as buying, you know, even a budget model dehydrator. We do a lot of like fruit leathers and stuff like that. Not so much now that my kids are grown, but when my kids were young, we were always doing fruit leathers and dehydrating bananas and stuff like that. It's a great way and a low cost way to store food for a while. It's not going to store as long as, say, canning, things like that, but it will definitely extend the lifespan without sacrificing much of the nutritional value. Because all you're doing is you're removing the moisture. The nutrients in large part are still going to be there. Now, in recent years, home freeze dryer units have become available. The company that's doing it predominantly is Harvest Right. I think there might be another company that has started doing it, but for up until very recently, Harvest Right has been the only game in town. They work very, very well, but they're also very, very expensive. Basically, what freeze drying does is it removes something like 98% of the moisture from the food, and it does it so quickly that it doesn't change the texture of the food. When you rehydrate it, when you add the water and mix it all up and let it sit for a bit, it comes out looking almost identical to what it did before it went through the process. Whereas dehydrating food like vegetables and fruit, it's not going to rehydrate as well, you know, if at all. A lot of people, we dehydrate apples and stuff like that. We're just eating them. We're not soaking them back in water to puff them back up or anything. With these freeze dryer units, they work really well. They're really expensive. And what a lot of people have started doing is they've turned it into a little home-based business where they'll freeze dry candy, and candy comes out really goofy. It comes out weird. You know, it puffs up and does all kinds of things, and they'll sell that online or, you know, at farmers markets and things like that to help offset the cost of that unit, because they're also using the unit to freeze dry food that they're going to store for their family. I'm aware of some neighborhoods where there's, you know, six or seven families who are all involved in preparedness, and they all kind of chipped in to buy a freeze dryer, and then it either stays at one house and everybody brings food over to it, or that unit gets shifted around, they're big, they're cumbersome. It can be done, but it's recommended to just stay in one place and everybody gets a turn, so to speak, to preserve their food. This isn't a bad option if you can pull it off financially. You know, these units are a few thousand dollars. They're not cheap, and they take up a fair bit of space. This isn't something you're just going to have working, on a corner of your kitchen counter while you're making dinner. I mean, these are pretty substantial units.
So my other question for you, as far as shelf time,
mm-hmm.
Let's say Daisha goes to the grocery store this week. She buys an extra week's worth of food. Now, you can get canned vegetables, but you can also get shelf-stable things that come in plastic containers, like the little Jell-O cups, little pudding yep. cups, things like that. Is there a school of thought that one is better than the other?
Not necessarily. For my purposes, same. Okay? Whether you're getting something in a can or you're getting something in a pouch, or you're getting something in a plastic container, realistically, you're not looking to store these things for decades. Okay. Most people probably aren't going to go beyond a couple of months worth of food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just simply for lack of space, if nothing else. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of little nooks and crannies where you can hide stuff in your house, you know, under your beds, the backs of closets, you know, things like that. But at the end of the day, most people aren't going to do that. Most people they're limited by what is immediately available to them for shelf space. And when they hit that limit, that's it. They're just going to keep rotating through that amount. And again, you know, the length of time that things are going to stay good, that goes back to the rotation. You shouldn't buy other than the freeze-dried and dehydrated survival foods, okay? Anything you're going to buy at a grocery store, you shouldn't buy it with the thought of, I'm going to throw it on the shelf and it's just going to sit there for 30 years. Don't do that. Buy things that you're going to eat and rotate through. You just want stuff that's going to last a while on the shelf in case the grid goes down. It's not immediately going to go bad in the next week.
Right.
Oh, my favorite Costco buy is canned chicken.
Yep.
Just because it's really good for like, what is that? A buffalo chicken dip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We do the canned chicken. I haven't tried them yet, but I recently went out and I splurged and bought a bunch of different of the pouch chicken and spam and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
For an article I'm going to be doing, and I wanted to play around with them and just see how they come out with different cooking methods and things like that. But that's definitely something to consider. I mean, these things are out there at Walmart, at the grocery store. You don't have to, you know, seek them out at special survival stores. You know, I go to my Walmart, there's an 8-foot section that's all chicken, beef, tuna, spam, mm-hmm. all of it ready to go.
Packaged, yeah.
Yep.
You bring up a good point. I mean, we've talked about storage, different methods of preservation. Again, folks, if you don't know how to can, there's all kinds of resources out there. I mean, we could do a whole episode on canning itself, and maybe we will at some point. But we should talk about actual meal preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in a in a crisis situation, let's go with grid down since we've been using that as our example this week. There's no power, so you can't run the microwave.
Yep.
You can't run the oven. So how does Dacia then prepare that meal?
I have a gas stove.
Okay. How does a listener who's not
have a gas stove? Well, a lot of people can't just light up a fire either. Yeah. Like if you're in the suburbs, maybe you got the little fire pit out in the patio. And if that's what you got, use it.
Yep. You know what most people have? Grills.
Oh, yeah.
Gas grill, charcoal grill. Mm-hmm. Now, helpful tip, pro tip. Your charcoal grill can burn more than charcoal.
Hmm.
You can take twigs and sticks and branches and break them up and put them into that charcoal in the, you know, the bottom of the grill and light it up and cook over that.
Yep.
You know, I was kind of proud of myself that I came up with this. Make a long story short, we were having some people over and I needed extra grill space. I have a gas grill. I had a charcoal grill. I needed one more cooking surface. And I had recently just replaced my gas grill, but I only had the one tank. So I took the old gas grill, put it next to the new one, took all the guts out of the bottom of the gas grill, and I went to the dollar store and bought a couple of foil pans.
Uh-huh.
And put those in the bottom, put charcoal and charcoal fluid on them, lit them up, and away I went.
There you go.
Worked like a dream. You know, the patio fire pits, if you have that, that's mm-hmm. definitely an option. They're solar cookers, solar ovens. You know, there are all kinds of plans online where you can take a cardboard box and some tin foil and turn it into an oven. They work and they work well, but this isn't fast. You're uh-huh. going to be waiting a while, you know, and obviously, you know, this is not a midnight snack solution. There are any variety of camp stoves that you can buy ahead of time with little canisters of fuel to keep just in case. They're not very expensive. The gas stores very well. And what's nice about some of them is it's very much like cooking over a regular gas stove at home. You know, this isn't anything really new. You know, the concept is familiar. The downside of using your gas grills and your charcoal grills is a lot of that heat energy is going to go to waste. You know, if all you're looking to do is boil a pot of water, you're going to be wasting a lot of that fuel just to bring that pot of water to a boil. What you can do is double up, you know, and let's say you want to cook dinner, but you also need to boil some water to make it safe to drink. You know, do that at the same time so that way you're taking as best advantage of the fuel as possible.
And then after the sun goes down too, if you need it for heat.
Yes. Yep. Yep. There's another one is what they call hay box cooking, where what you do is you bring your pot of food to a boil. You cover it and you put it into a heavily insulated container. And it continues to cook for hours with no fuel added. You're not still burning fuel. They used to use this like back in the pioneer days. They would, you know, start making lunch at breakfast and have that, we'll just say a pot of chili. And they would, you know, bring it to a boil, cover it, and then put it in a box that's literally lined with hay, seal it up, and let it just cook all day long. And then come dinner time or late lunch, it's ready to go. And all you did was bring it to a boil and shut the fuel off.
Hmm. Is a hole like the same idea, like a yeah. snug hole and then yep. put like, yeah. Huh. Yeah.
Same concept.
Like cooking a pig.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Except you're cooking Spam. Kind of pig.
So before we close out, Jim, I think you had a homework assignment
yes.
for our listeners this week.
And this is a variation on something that I learned from my friend Daisy Luther, who I highly recommend her books. And she has a website called theorganicprepper.com. Lots of great resources there. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a list of 7 meals that your family likes that uses all or mostly shelf-stable ingredients, things that you could buy and just leave on a shelf. You're not refrigerating them. You're not freezing them. You're not dehydrating or anything. Just regular stuff found at your grocery store, but a full meal, not just the main course. I want everything. And I want you to make that list of 7 full meals that your family will like. And then next week, I'll tell you what to do with that list.
I think that's a great homework assignment. And it will go well. Yeah, it will go well with next week's topic, which is, in conjunction with food, water.
Yep.
Which is probably even more important than food.
It is. But it is. Here's why I wanted to start with food. A lot of people, when you talk to them, when they're new to prepping, and you'll ask, you know, what are you concerned about with preparedness? Almost overwhelmingly, their answers would be, I want to be able to feed my family. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to eat. They don't think, I want to be able to drink water. They think, I want to be able to eat. I want my family to eat. I don't want my family to starve. So we start with food, and then we go to water. They go hand in hand, but food, for most people, that's top of mind.
All right. Well, guys, as always, it's been a pleasure. Daisha, you've got some homework for this
week. I know.
And next week we will be back with an episode about water, the most important thing on the planet.
So important. Yes. And fun. It'll be fun and entertaining as well.
It will. If you're just joining us, this is How to Survive 2025. It's a podcast about prepping without politics or doom porn or anything that you may expect. Simple tips from three people who just want to share, because as we head into 2025, regardless of your political affiliation or your social standing or your gender or anything else, there's a lot of people who are nervous, a lot of people who are scared. And we're here to help you out with that. We're here to offer you some tips and some knowledge. If you like the show, please consider reviewing us. If you're on Apple or Spotify or wherever, 5 stars goes a long way towards helping us out, folks.
Yep. And if you have questions, feel free to reach out through wherever you're finding us on social media.
Yep. And I guess we should mention, we now have our own website.
We do-ish. So you can find all three of us at howtosurvive2025.com. It'll bring you to a landing page with all of the episodes available to listen right there. You'll also get links to Brian's website and to Jim's website and to more about me and my website. And all of our social media links are there as well.
Yep. Awesome. All right, guys, we will see you next week.